सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावतीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ओम शांति शांति शांति। Chant was a 6 to 10, chapter 1. I don't know.
Avanti should be coming and the others are all traveling.
Was it 6 to 10?
Have you done 6?
No, we'll chant.
Okay.
Yeah. युदामन्योश्च विक्रांतः युदामन्योश्च विक्रांतः उत्तमौजाश्च वीर्यवान् उत्तमौजाश्च वीर्यवान् सौभद्रो द्रौपदेयाश्च सौभद्रो द्रौपदेयाश्च सर्व एव महारथाः सर्व एव महारथाः युदामन्योश्च विक्रांतः उत्तमौजाश्च वीर्यवान् सौभद्रो द्रौपदेयाश्च सर्व एव महारथाः अस्माकं तु विशिष्टाये अस्माकं तु विशिष्टाये तानि बोधद्विजोत्तम तानि बोधद्विजोत्तम नायका मम सैन्यस्य नायका मम सैन्यस्य संज्ञार्थं तान् ब्रवीमिते संज्ञार्थं तान् ब्रवीमिते अस्माकं तु विशिष्टाये तानि बोधद्विजोत्तम नायका मम सैन्यस्य संज्ञार्थं तान् ब्रवीमिते भवान् भीष्मश्च कर्णश्च भवान् भीष्मश्च कर्णश्च कृपश्च समितिञ्जयः कृपश्च समितिञ्जयः अश्वत्थामाविकर्णश्च अश्वत्थामाविकर्णश्च सौमदत्तिस्तथैव च सौमदत्तिस्तथैव च भवान् भीष्मश्च कर्णश्च कृपश्च समितिञ्जयः अश्वत्थामाविकर्णश्च सौमदत्तिस्तथैव च अन्ये च बहवः शूराः अन्ये च बहवः शूराः मदत्ते त्यक्तजीविताः मदत्ते त्यक्तजीविताः नानाशस्त्रप्रहरणाः नानाशस्त्रप्रहरणाः सर्वे युद्धविशारदाः सर्वे युद्धविशारदाः अन्ये च बहवः शूराः मदर्ते त्यक्तजीविताः नानाशस्त्रप्रहरणाः सर्वे युद्धविशारदाः अपर्याप्तं तदस्माकम् अपर्याप्तं तदस्माकम् बलं भीष्माभिरक्षितं बलं भीष्माभिरक्षितं पर्याप्तं त्विदमेतेषां पर्याप्तं त्विदमेतेषां बलं भीष्माभिरक्षितं बलं भीष्माभिरक्षितं अपर्याप्तं तदस्माकं बलं भीष्माभिरक्षितं पर्याप्तं त्विदमेतेषां बलं भीष्माभिरक्षितं। The blind king Duryodhana's father Dhritarashtra is asking Sanjaya the charioteer to report to him about what is happening on the battlefield miles away from Hastinapura where he is seated. Sanjaya was endowed with this capacity to see what is happening miles away. Now this is this capacity the thought may come in us whether such a thing is possible or is it only possible for few people. Now the possibility of seeing what is happening miles away, going beyond the time and date, is possible for every one of us, but there are certain efforts that one need to do to go within and unravel that capacity. So this capacity Sanjaya had, and Sanjaya reports to Dhritarashtra, and he says Duryodhan walked up to his guru Drona, but his body language was expressing the ego which was there inside in Duryodhan. How much ever Duryodhan tried to hide it, he could not. From the body language he could see it. So he goes and introduces the people on both the sides. Now till 6 he says, he talks about people who have come to fight on the side of the Pandavas. Now from 7 he will start talking about those who have come on to fight, who are there on their side as well. So we'll chant verse number 7 once again. Asmakam tu vishishtaye, asmakam tu vishishtaye, tani bodat vijottama, tani bodat vijottama, nayaka mama sainyasya, nayaka mama sainyasya, samyartam tam bravimite, samyartam tam bravimite, asmakam tu vishishtaye, tani bodat vijottama, nayaka mama sainyasya, samyartam tam bravimite. He addresses Drona as Dvijotama. O Dvijotama, know also those who are distinguished among us. The leaders of my army. He doesn't say leaders of our army. He says leaders of my army. Mama Sainyasya. These I mention to you for information. Drona is addressed as Dvijotama. Dvijotama meaning the best among the twice born. The ceremony of thread ceremony, called as thread ceremony, which is given to children at the age of 7 or 8, is a ritual that is followed, because when we are born, we are only born with the body but mind not so developed. An intellect certainly not at all developed. Around that age of 7, 8, the mind, the intellect slowly starts blossoming. So you are initiated into the scriptures, because as human beings we need to adapt ourselves to the world and go beyond the world to the origin from where we have originated. So you are initiated into the scriptures by the masters, into the study. The idea is trying to initiate the growth of the mind and intellect. So twice born means this Drona is basically a Brahmana, and he has been initiated into the study of the scriptures. So this thread ceremony is basically to initiate us into the study of the scriptures. Animals are fully determined by the law of heredity, whereas human beings are not only determined by law of heredity, but we also have what is called as law of adaptation. Human being only has the potential to choose. He has the capacity to choose. Animals do not. Animals don't have choice of action. And the fact that we have this choice of action, we better develop our intellect, strengthen the intellect, so that we make right choices. And intellect is available to every human being as a potential. But if it is not developed, it remains as a potential. So you need to go through education, formal education, so that you can adapt and adjust, learn about the world and adjust and guide yourself in this journey of life. So you are introduced into scriptures, because the scriptures tell us that the ultimate goal of human life is to get back to the origin. The term religion in English comes from the root religare, which means to unite back to the origin. Yoga also means uniting back with the origin. While we are born as children, all of us have the pure innocence. The only problem is it is unconscious innocence. So the idea of evolution is to move from innocence to innocence, from unconscious innocence to conscious innocence, which is human perfection. As we grow physically, the ego tends to rise. We rise in ignorance. We develop more and more ignorance. The more we come to know about the world, the more egoistic we become. Initially we think the world is there only to serve us. Then we take up responsibility and we think that I can take care of myself. Then slowly, slowly your maturity improves. Then you develop surrender. Then through surrender you finally realize the self, your original nature, and you again get back to that innocence. So the cycle is from innocence to innocence. But the initial innocence when we were children, it is unconscious innocence. The final innocence when you reach the self, it is conscious innocence. In between stage that we are in today, it is filled with ignorance. So from innocence to ignorance to innocence. That's the idea. So to extricate ourselves from this ignorance that we have fallen into in the in-between stages, we are initiated into the study of scriptures, because the study of scriptures talk about the scriptures talk about who you are essentially. What is this world all about? What is this life all about? So by studying that, slowly you develop the objectivity, provided you do manana and nididhyasana, not just stop at shravana. Shravana means study, listening. Manana means reflection. Nididhyasana means constant meditation upon what you studied. So when you do this, then you can extricate yourself from the ignorance that you have caught up in between and go to that ultimate pure innocence, realize the self. So this Vijotama here means initiation into the study of scriptures. So Drona is somebody who had gone through the scriptures. So he addresses Drona as Dvijotama. Oh Dvijotama, now let me tell you about those who have come to fight on our side also, the leaders of our army. That is what he should have mentioned. But he says my army. This is what, how much ever he tries to hide his ego, it comes forth in his words, through his body language, through his speech, it comes forth. So he says, my army, nayaka mama sainyasya, leaders of my army. I will mention these people for your information. Then he continues to give the list. Bhavan bhishmascha karnascha, bhavan bhishmascha karnascha, kripascha samitinjayah, kripascha samitinjayah, ashwatthama vikarnascha, ashwatthama vikarnascha, saumadattistataivacha, bhavan bhishmascha karnascha, kripascha samitinjayah, kripascha samitinjayah, ashwatthama vikarnascha, ashwatthama vikarnascha, saumadattistataivacha. Thyself and Bhishma and Karna and Kripa, the victorious in battle, Ashwatthama, Vikarna, and also the son of Somadatta. He is given few names from their side. Now, the names of Drona, Bhishma, these are great stalwarts. You know, Bhishma itself means terrible. A person with terrible vow. he got this name when he took that vow that he will not claim the throne. For that, what he had to do? He said, I will not marry, because even later on maybe my children can come and claim it. So I will not even marry, I will remain a celibate throughout my life. So that sort of a terrible vow he took for the sake of his father, so that he can satisfy his father's wish. So somebody who has a great sacrifice, and you get power through sacrifice. Power comes when you prepare yourself to sacrifice and you sacrifice. Through selfishness only fear comes, not power. No selfish person can be free from fear and insecurity. The more unselfish and selfless you become, more powerful you become. You may not want to use that power at all. Truly speaking, a powerful person will never use his power. So Bhishma, Karna was also a great giver. You know, Karna, it is said that he only gave. Anybody asks anything, he'll give. And when he gives, he didn't want to have this feeling that his hand is above the taker. So he never gave keeping his hand above. He always kept it like this, so that the person who takes, his hand is above. You know, that is what is mentioned in this Puranas about Karna.
But there's lots of things about Karna.
Yeah, he's not a perfect soul, but he had great qualities. They had not reached the perfection, but each one of them were great in their own sense.
Like to put Karna before Kripacharya?
Well, it need not, see, you need not take it that way. You know, it is just a list. It's not that Karna is superior to Kripa or anything of that sort. But you know, thyself, Bhishma, Karna and Kripa, the victorious in battle. Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama is also very, very powerful. Vikarna is one of the brothers of Duryodhana. In fact, Vikarna is one person who stood up
for Draupadi
when she was disrobed in the parliament. He stands up and speaks. He says, what you guys are doing is wrong. You know, and also the son of Somadatta. So all these people are assembled on our side. It's just a list he gives. Not that our side is left without any great warriors. Our side also has great warriors. It's not that Drona doesn't know. He knows. But Duryodhana is just saying it to give as information.
Saying it more for himself.
Yeah, more for himself. And again, in 9, you can see how his ego comes through. Anye cha bahavas shuraha, anye cha bahavas shuraha, madarte tyakta jivitaha, madarte tyakta jivitaha, nana shastra praharanaha, nana shastra praharanaha, sarve yuddha visharadaha,
sarve
yuddha visharadaha, anye cha bahavas shuraha, madarte tyakta jivitaha, nana shastra praharanaha, sarve yuddha visharadaha. And many other heroes who have given up their lives for my sake. Again the word my comes in. Armed with various weapons and missiles, all well skilled in battle. Now, this statement that Duryodhana makes, that many heroes other than the list that I have just given have also come to fight on our side, and they have come on for my sake, which is not true. They did not come for my sake, for the sake of Duryodhana. Each one had come for certain ideal for which they stand, the ideal in which they believe. Therefore they had come. Bhishma did not approve of what the Kauravas did. You understand? Bhishma didn't come there approving what the Kauravas did. But since he gave up the throne, he has now become the soldier. And he has a duty to fight when his state has declared the war. So he had come to the battlefield just for the sake of the duty, not for the sake of Duryodhan, not to please Duryodhan. You understand? So a lot of people had come not just to please Duryodhan, they had come there to do their duty. But Duryodhan feels good. He thinks this way. But he quickly realizes that this is not going to unite the forces. Because when you want to unite the forces, you need some cause. You understand? Something that will unite. During election time, suddenly you will see the politicians bringing a certain name. Because that will unite everybody. You understand? Team is that which is come together. You can bring in people together and assemble. That can be a crowd but not a team. Assembling number of people at a particular place doesn't by itself make it a team. And victory will come only to the team, not to the crowd. Somebody who works for a cause will be able to unite everybody. There is some cause. So by saying they have come for my sake, this is not going to unite them together. He quickly realizes that. Nobody who is selfish can unite the people, and even if he can, he cannot unite the people for long. So he needs some cause, some goal. You know, like every organization also has what is called as vision statement, mission statement. And many organizations, the leaders form the mission statement and it is just there on the board outside at the reception or in your books just to get the ISO certificate. The mission statement should be something that reverberates with all the employees. Then you've got the team. Right? So, truly speaking, the mission statement should be evolved, not dictated. You can't dictate a vision. It should be evolved. Then everybody will be inspired by that. So, Duryodhan quickly realizes that his ego is not going to bring the forces together. He was capable of putting them there, assembling them there, but they need to unite. So he needs some buddy's name which can inspire everybody. So quickly he uses Bhishma's name in the next verse. Aparyatam tadasmakam, aparyatam tadasmakam, balam bhishma bhirakshitam, balam bhishma bhirakshitam, paryatam tvidametesham, paryatam tvidametesham, balam bhima bhirakshitam, balam bhima bhirakshitam, aparyatam tadasmakam, balam bhishma bhirakshitam, paryatam tvidametesham, balam bhima bhirakshitam. This army of ours, protected by Bhishma, is unlimited. It doesn't say protected by Duryodhan, protected by me. Protected by Bhishma is unlimited. He quickly brings in Bhishma's name. Because Bhishma's name can unite people. Can inspire them to come together. So this army of ours protected by Bhishma is unlimited. Aparyaptam is the word used here, which also has another meaning, which is insufficient. So you can write the translation side by side. Here the translation in the book is, this army of ours protected by Bhishma is unlimited. The other translation could be, this army of ours protected by Bhishma is insufficient. And the next line reads in the book, whereas that army of theirs protected by Bhima is limited, paryaptam. But the word paryaptam also means sufficient. So the next translation could be, whereas that army of theirs protected by Bhima is limited. See, Kaurava army had 11 akshavanis, 11 battalions. Pandava army had only 7 akshavanis, 7 battalions. So compared to 7 battalions, 11 battalions is unlimited. So you can take it as a statement of fact, which is Kaurava army protected by Bhishma, because Bhishma was the commander-in-chief, was installed as the commander-in-chief of the Kaurava army. So our army protected by Bhishma is unlimited. We are more in number compared to the Pandava army. But if you bring in the other meaning, insufficient, even though our army is unlimited, it is insufficient. There is Krishna on their side, quality on their side, the inner quality, dharma on their side. Dharma is not there on the side of Duryodhana. Dharma is on the side of Pandavas.
But does he believe that? He doesn't.
He knows that deep inside.
He does know that.
Every selfish person, destructive person, deep inside is scared. That's what we discussed just now also. Selfishness will always go along with insecurity. When you are unselfish or selfless, there is no fear. A person who is working in an organization, who is involved in politics rather than duty, he is getting into politics to come up the ladder rather than just believing in his duty and delivering what he is supposed to do. He is the most insecure fellow compared to the other fellow who is just doing what he is supposed to do. And his duty will slowly bring him up the ladder and he can sleep peacefully. He is not looking at harming anybody, pushing somebody down to climb the ladder, nothing of that sort. So he remains peaceful. And his peace helps him to think better and contribute better. So sheer dharma will slowly take him up. And he will remain peaceful throughout the journey. Whereas the other fellow, scheming and planning and all that, he is constantly terrified that maybe others are also doing the same thing to affect. You understand? So if you see in animals, it's very clear. The destructive animal like lion or tiger is terrified. Even the lizard on the wall, if you tap on this table here, the lizard there will run, because it's constantly destroying. A cow which is constructive, which is calm and composed, not at all destructive, you go nearby, it remains quiet. It's not scared. So fear, insecurity is an essential thing that happens to you when you leave dharma and move towards the ego, become selfish, self-centered, become egoistic, arrogant, destructive. Ego is nothing but a feeling of separation. You separate yourself from the totality and assume an individuality. So you create otherness, and otherness creates fear. You go to a place which is new to you, you do not know anybody, you are initially little scared. Once you get to know a lot of people, then you are comfortable, because the feeling of oneness has come. So when you separate yourself from the total and assume arrogance, assume an ego, then definitely there is a sense of insecurity. So Duryodhana definitely did not follow dharma. Therefore, certainly there is insecurity. You know, in Tamil we say, madiyila ganam, valiyila bhayam. Which means, if there is weight, money or wealth in your pocket, and you are walking on the road, then there is fear. If there is nothing in your pocket and you are walking in the crowded streets, absolutely no fear. So if inside there is something that you do, which is you go against what you ought to do, or you do what you ought not to do, or when you don't do what you ought to do, then there is guilt. So in Duryodhana, he is clearly gone against dharma. What he has to do, he did not do. What he ought not to have done, he did. So there is this terrible fear lurking within his personality. how much ever he may try to show it, not show it outside, but his words will express it. When we read these verses, it becomes much more clear. This army of ours protected by Bhishma is unlimited. Outside strength is nothing compared to the inside strength. We discussed this last week also. Culture values things that are internal, intrinsic, not external, extrinsic. A person who lacks culture, who lacks maturity, he will be valuing things extrinsic and external. The more mature you become, you learn that these are only outside things which are not so valuable compared to the inside things. So Duryodhan, when he approached Krishna, alongside Arjuna had also gone side by side, he had also approached Krishna. Both of them went to Krishna at the same time. Arjuna came back with Krishna, Duryodhan came back with the army. Arjuna is happy with Krishna without weapons, whereas Duryodhan is happy with the army with all the weapons. His value was external, Arjuna's value was internal. So the person who settles for the quantity will soon find that quantity is not something that will provide me the security that essentially for which I acquired it. So many children Shah Jahan had. Finally he was arrested and imprisoned by his own son. So in thought inside many people is that by having children they will be able to
secure.
They will be our security in future. But deep inside, like Adi Shankara says in Bhaja Govindam, for the rich even the children become a source of insecurity. You understand? You do not know whether you can write off all your property to them. Will they really take care of you, or they'll throw you away? When you become old, such thoughts starts coming, he says. Like in King Lear, it actually happened. In the story of King Lear, when Shakespeare speaks about it, the children, the first two daughters who were flattering him, he gave the property to the first two, and the third one he just banished. And they threw him back. They just did not take care of him. So, what all we acquire in this world, thinking that that will provide us security, from all that you will find that you are only being insecure. Isn't it? You try to accumulate wealth, then you are very scared because of the wealth itself you could be attacked. Then you think, okay, my children will take care. So you bring forth children. Then you are not very sure whether the children will take care of you. So in other words, all that he is trying to say here in these words, it's all packed inside. That quantity, external quantity, is not enough to bring in the inner feeling of security. Everything that we are trying to do, conquer externally, is only with the idea of gaining the inner security. But the more we acquire, more we seem to lose the feeling of security, the more we become insecure. So what do? We try to collect friends, we try to become members of this club, that club, including Bhagavad Gita club. You understand? All sorts of clubs, as much as possible, hoping that it will bring me security. Knowledge, if not knowledge, experience will teach you that the real security is only yourself, nothing else. Investing time and effort in acquiring objects outside with the hope of bringing security is due to ignorance and delusion. A person with knowledge will not run after acquisitions for gaining security. But for external transaction, acquisitions help. If you have to go from one place to another, the mode of transport, transportation is required, and the mode of transport can vary. It depends on your work. You need a car or a bike or whatever. For that practical reasons, that will help you. But thinking that that will provide security is because of ignorance and delusion. So Vedanta is not saying you should not earn wealth, but running after wealth, which is basically thinking that it will provide me security, that is delusion. That is madness. That's all Vedanta is saying. If you understand this, then you will not be running after acquisition. You will be following dharma, and the fact that you follow dharma, wealth will follow you. And whatever wealth follows you, you use it for the practical reasons. See, money per se, is it enough to bring in happiness? So money cannot provide happiness, we all know this. So does it mean, can we say that poverty will provide happiness? No. Money brings option. If you are suffocated with money in Delhi, you can spend money and go to a very, very rich and posh resort, spa, and suffocate yourself there. Option is there. If you are poor, then you have to suffocate yourself only in Delhi. If you are rich, then you can go somewhere else, Switzerland, wherever, and suffocate yourself. Okay. That option is there, that's all. So money per se is not going to give you happiness, neither poverty. So there is nothing wrong in money. Money has certain practical value. But assuming that money, people, everything that we are trying to collect here will bring us that inner security is certainly due to the ignorance and delusion. And Duryodhana had given into the ways of ego. He was totally engrossed in ignorance. He did not have the true knowledge. He had collected so much in quantity, but still feels extremely insecure. So we are not any different from Duryodhana when we are also running after acquisition as an end in itself. So Vedanta is only against acquisition as an end in itself. For example, even acquiring the knowledge of the Gita, if it is acquiring knowledge of the Gita as an end in itself, thinking that alone is enough, it's madness. We keep mentioning this in the classes. Gita or Vedanta, all the scriptures are only mirrors. Don't forget this term. They are only mirrors. You are supposed to look through the mirror, see the reflection. Whatever blemishes are there in our body, if there is some dirt on the face, take a cloth and wipe it. So it is for you to look inside. Gita should enable you to look inside, look within. But unfortunately, a lot of us get caught in the very Gita itself. You know, if somebody can come and get into the grammar rules of Gita and go into too much of Sanskrit and all that, probably we may get impressed. I'm not saying you should not study the grammar or anything, but anything that you do as an end in itself, you will still feel insecure after all the Gita and everything. Who is truly secure? Who is truly strong?
Vibes it in their living.
Deep inside, one who has no thought of somebody capable of harming him. Okay. Whatever you are full of will not be found in the mind. If you are truly rich, we discussed this last week or week before, who is rich? In whose mind money is not there? Wealth is not there. He is rich. Who is really strong? In whose mind there is no opponent who is capable of destroying? Absolutely. There is nobody. Who is there? Who can come and finish me? So in the second chapter he says, self is something which is indestructible. Weapons do not cleave the self. Wind does not blow it. Fire doesn't burn it. Water doesn't wet it. The subtlest aspect of human personality is the spirit, the self, Atman. So there is, like this fast food joint is there, no, called a Subway. There is something called as ego way, self way. Ego way is extroverted. Self way is introverted. Those who are following the ego way, they go on accumulating words. Even if they come to the scriptures, they will only be accumulating words. You understand? Little more accumulate meanings. The really introverted person, truly introverted person, will not be interested in words and meanings. He will go beyond that and he will want to become one with the self. Nothing short of it. So quantity vis-a-vis quality. What is your value? External or internal? Which are the areas in which external things can help? With the money you can buy the most expensive bed, not necessarily sleep. Sleep is a different ballgame altogether. Isn't it? So, if you understand this, then you understand Vedanta. Because people do not understand Vedanta this way, they get scared that they think, acha, Vedanta means it will make me run away from the world. It will tell me to stop earning. Vedanta is against E, it's not against EARM. It is against YEARM. You understand? Vedanta is not against EARM. It is against YEARM. This craving is what Vedanta is against. Running after, like Mahatma Gandhiji says, you must find a purpose in life. Means will follow. He says, find a purpose, means will follow. But the problem with us is, all our education and everything that we go through is only for finding the means. This course will make me earn more, so I go to that course, so that I can get more money. With money, what I can do? I can find the means. But I entirely miss the boat. Because with all the quantity around, I feel extremely insecure, suffocated inside. What is the use? So with or without the quantity around, I should still maintain my security inside. It's got, just because you have money doesn't mean you will be insecure. It is to do with your attitude. It is to do with your inner development, inner maturity. So that is what we see in this verse. This army of ours protected by Bhishma. He quickly brings in the name of Bhishma because Bhishma is a person who can inspire everybody for them to come together, because a team is very, very necessary. If you study the book Vedanta Treatise, Swamiji talks about the three C's for success. He says, the first C for success is concentration. What is concentration? He defines concentration as when your intellect keeps your mind on the present action to the exclusion of the past worries and future anxieties and present excitement, then you are concentrating. When your intellect keeps your mind on the present action without allowing it to slip into the past worries, future anxieties and excitement in the present, then you are concentrating. Then it is concentration. If your mind by itself runs to an object, doesn't mean it is concentration. Like a boy who has fallen in love with a girl, 24 hours he is only thinking of her. You can say, what a concentration. You understand? That is not concentration. So concentration is essential for you to be successful in any field. So intellect governing the mind and keeping it in the present action is one of the most important ingredients of success and retention of success. And second quality, which is even more important, is consistency. What is consistency? Consistency is when your intellect keeps all your actions towards the chosen goal, in line with the chosen goal, then it is consistency. If your goal is to be a cricketer and you are representing the country, what time you wake up, what time you go to sleep, what do you do after you wake up, how much time you need to train, are you doing it, what kind of food you are eating, what kind of gossips you are allowing to enter into your mind, all that you need to be very careful. If you are not consistent, you slip in any of this, then what happens? To that extent you cannot be performing well. And when you do not perform well, you will obviously not be selected. And that will agitate you further. You will get caught in the vicious cycle. And the most important thing, the third one, is cooperative endeavor. Cooperation. Without the cooperation of others, you cannot succeed. And you can only get the cooperation of others by lending your cooperation. The way to gain others' cooperation is what? Extending your cooperation. An egoistic person never extends his cooperation. So Duryodhan quickly understands, if I say my sake, then these guys will not be coming together. So he quickly uses the word Bhishma, the name Bhishma here, because that can unite them, bring them together from inside. And cooperation is necessary. And then he says, whereas that army of theirs protected by Bhima is limited. Now, if you see, Bhishma was the commander-in-chief of Kaurava army. So when he said our army is protected by Bhishma is correct, why does he say their army is protected by Bhima? Their army is actually protected by Drishtadyumna, because he was the commander-in-chief. Either you should have said Drishtadyumna, or you should have said Arjuna maybe, because he was a very famous warrior, a superstar of the Pandava army. It's like in Indian cricket you have Dhoni and Tendulkar. Dhoni is the captain. Now suddenly where is, or you can say Tendulkar, now suddenly where is in this picture here Bhima come into picture? Because he knew Drishtadyumna could be tackled. That's not a big deal. Okay. Arjuna also he did not actually fear. You know why? Because Duryodhana's calculation was, Arjun, of course Karna can take care of Arjun, and Arjun, he also expected that might leave the battle. Because he had really assessed Arjuna in such a way that he knew Arjuna was weak inside.
In terms of the attachment to the Guru's...
Yeah, in terms of attachment to the Guru and
Drona.
Bhishma. He knew that this fellow inside has a soft corner, has a weakness inside. So he might leave any time. But the real trouble is Bhima, who had physical strength, who had absolutely almost zero intellect. You understand? Only mind. And mind is very stubborn. And Bhima had taken a vow that he will not rest content until he finishes Duryodhana and the Dushasana and the rest. So he knew that Bhima will fight till the end. But he also expected that Arjun will leave the battle in between. See, Duryodhana is a vicious person, but a very, very calculative person. Again, Swamiji talks about four types of human beings. Firstly, he talks about them and says there are two broad classifications among human beings. One is called as aggressive, the other is called as passive. Aggressive meaning those who predominantly conduct their life propelled by intellect. Passive meaning those who predominantly conduct their life propelled by mind. Okay. One set of people are propelled by intellect predominantly. Other set of people are propelled by mind predominantly. Mind. That's what I'm coming to. Every human being has three equipments. Basically, all of us are made up of spirit and matter. Spirit is the God consciousness, the self, Atman, God, whatever that portion is. And the matter component is the body, the physical body, mind and intellect. Body is housed with organs of perception and organs of action. The five organs of perceptions: eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin. The five organs of action: hands, feet, mouth, organ of evacuation and organ of procreation. The five organs of perception and five organs of action is what we all of us are made up of at the physical level. Right? Then at the mind level, what is the mind? Mind is the seat of desires, likes and dislikes, emotions, feelings, impulses. Mind is also thought flow, intellect is also thought flow, but the mind is indiscriminate thought flow. Each one of us have a particular set of likes and dislikes. Your like may be different from my like, but you also have likes, I also have likes. If somebody asks me, why have you picked up this like? Why don't you like that? Do I have any logic for it? I don't know. Somebody likes sweet, somebody hates sweet. Is there any logic? They thought about it and then they took it up. There is no logic or reason or rhyme, or reason, dimension in mind. It's just an indiscriminate thought flow. When it comes to intellect, it's the faculty that can discriminate, analyze, judge, think, reason. This is the intellect. So a discriminate thought flow is intellect. Indiscriminate thought flow is mind. All of us are made up of this thoughts, body and the self, Atman. Our body is the external vehicle. It's like the body of the car. Body of the car by itself doesn't go from one place to another. It is the engine that moves the car from one place to another. The driver driving the engine moves the car from one place to another. Similarly, we all have the physical body. Physical body by itself doesn't go from one place to another. For example, it did not go from your house and come here to attend the class by itself. You were informed about the Gita classes. You probably had the desire to study the Gita class. So the desire pushed you. Let me listen to Gita. because I have this desire. For so many years I have developed this desire. Or you probably don't have that kind of desire, but you have heard from people that it is something that is essential for life. So your intellect says it is something that is a must for you to help you to live this life peacefully and productively. So you could have got up from your house, your body could have got up from your house and driven to this house to attend the session by the mind or the intellect or the combination. You could also have the desire and the intellect also said that's the right thing to do. Or only mind, only intellect. Whatever may be, the inside pushes the body to move and attend the session. So body is only a vehicle. Mind and intellect is the inside engine and the driver. Which is more important and essential?
Intellect.
So the intellect should drive the engine, the mind and the body. Then the journey of life will be smooth. That is the significance and symbolism behind the chariot in which Arjuna is seated and Krishna is the charioteer. We discussed about it also, if you remember. Arjuna is the individual, you and me. Chariot is the physical body. Horses are the senses. Reins are the mind. Krishna is the intellect. The charioteer holding the reins tightly and directing the horses on the path will make sure the individual seated in the chariot will travel the journey peacefully and reach the destination safely. If not, if the charioteer lets loose the reins, then the horses will go helter-skelter. Then the chariot will collapse, and the individual will be stranded on the path.
Chariot is the
intellect. Sorry, body. Arjuna is the individual, you and me. Horses are the senses. Krishna is the intellect. Reins are the mind.
The reins are the mind.
Yeah. Reins are tied to the senses. Arjuna is the individual. Charioteer is the intellect. Driver is the intellect.
How is the reins the mind?
In the sense, what controls the
senses
is the mind. What controls the horses is the reins. Ultimately, it is controlled by the charioteer. If the charioteer doesn't control the mind, the reins, then the senses go helter-skelter. So through the senses you have to hold the, sorry, through the mind you have to hold the senses. That's the idea. So, Bhima is physically strong. He is terrible. You understand? If he didn't have any weapons, he could uproot a huge tree and fight with it. That sort of power he had, physical strength. Somebody who lacks the intellect, the mind is so strong and stubborn. Mind is usually compared to wind. Wind is very, very strong. It can uproot. In a few minutes it comes to some cities, the tornado and all that. Afterwards you see it's a total devastation. Last year I think there was a powerful wind blowing in Delhi. One day so many trees were uprooted in Delhi and so much of traffic jam and all that. Just half a day maybe. Wind is very powerful. The mind is very stubborn without the intellect directing it. When the intellect directs the mind, it can become determined. But not stubborn. Without the intellect, mind is stubborn. And that's Bhima. He is not going to yield. He will fight. And is a very, very powerful enemy. Whereas in the case of Arjuna, Arjuna's mind was weak because it had so much of emotions overpowering him. So Duryodhana had rightly calculated that he could leave. So Duryodhan falls in the category aggressive. Category of aggressive, not passive. I was talking about the four types of human being, if you remember. Broadly speaking, two types, aggressive and passive. Aggressive uses the intellect. Passive uses the mind, predominantly. If the mind of the human being is good and he is using the intellect, then he becomes aggressively good. If the mind is bad and he is using the intellect, he becomes aggressively bad. If the mind of the person is good but not using the intellect, only the mind, then he becomes passively good.
Like Bhima.
And if the mind is bad and using only the mind, not the intellect, then you become passively bad. For example, you see your father smoking, drinking, whatever bad habits he is addicted to. You also pick up those habits mechanically. You are a passively bad person. You plan and scheme and harm somebody else, then you become aggressively bad person. Duryodhan is an aggressively bad fellow.
Arjun would be aggressively good.
Arjun is passively good.
Passively good. And
Krishna is aggressively good. Arjun is passively good.
And
Bhim would also be passively good. But in that, there is a slight difference between Bhima and Arjuna. Bhima is stubborn. In the case of Arjuna, he is not so stubborn.
Bhima doesn't use intellect.
Absolutely zero intellect. And Bhima is not given into weak pity, whereas Arjuna is given into weak pity. In fact, many of us are like Arjuna.
Bhishma
would be, you can say, I would say he is aggressively good, but there also there is a lot of range, you know. In aggressively good also there is a range. His duty, because of duty, he found himself on the side of Kauravas.
Yeah.
Not because he was supporting.
He's more duty bound because of his vow.
Yeah, there is a slight difference between Bhishma and Krishna. That is, Bhishma was duty bound, Krishna is duty centered. In life, you should be principle centered and not principle bound. Okay. But Bhishma, being the soldier, when the country had declared war, he just fought the battle. His intellect has accepted and he fought it. So you cannot say he is entirely passive good person. He was aggressively good person. But he had certain duties and responsibilities, and he thought that's the thing that he should be doing, therefore he did that.
Passively bad would be Dhritarashtra?
Yeah. You can say Dhritarashtra is passively bad. Duryodhan is out and out aggressively bad. So he had calculated so well that Arjun would probably leave the battlefield any day, any moment. So he thought his real threat was Bhima. You understand? If you clearly see in the Mahabharata also, none of these fellows had any problem. Bhima did not have any problem. Arjuna had the problem when he saw Bhishma and Drona.
Even Yudhishthira doesn't have a problem.
Yudhishthira did not have the problem because he also was not given into weak pity here, because he is a person who said, whatever was possible in our side, we had done that. We went through the dharmic methods of, what is the dharmic method? The dharmic method is, what is the first one? Sam, which is discussion. Then dham, giving into the others, then bed. Finally, dand. So Yudhishthira is satisfied that they followed Samdhan Bedhan. Arjun is a typical Rajasic character. You understand?
What character?
Rajasic.
Rajasic.
Rajasic fellow is a restless fellow. See, the mind has these two things. In fact, all the three qualities are there. Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. But in the case of Arjuna's mind was more Rajasic. In the case of Bhima, the mind was more Tamasic. You understand? So the problem is, Arjuna being Rajasic fellow, he will be restless, confused. Tamasic fellow is never confused. He is very sure. He may be wrong, but he is very sure. Sattvic fellow is also not very confused, not at all confused, because he is very clear. He is right and he is very clear. He is open to change. Tamasic fellow, never open to change. Rajasic fellow is in between case. Arjuna is this in between case.
Which we are. Yeah, because you might know what you think.
Morning,
you get weak.
You decide, I am not going to gossip. Evening, you go to the kitty party, you tend to gossip. You take decisions in the New Year's Eve, during the New Year's Eve, and then you get confused. Hey, it's not so. So why should I take? You know, I think made a mistake. I should change. Going on changing, confused. Rajasic. Rajasic mind typically is confused. Yudhishthira is relatively sattvic character. He is clear. He followed dharma. Samdhan Vedhan. So he is satisfied that way. Bhim is more of the tamas there. So he is very stubborn. You understand? He is also wanting to fight and finish them off. Fortunately, righteousness was on his side. He is a good fellow, no doubt, but he is more stubborn. So the real threat was Bhim. So therefore, he says that army of theirs protected by Bhima is limited. Externally, it looks like he is just talking about the 7 battalions and 11 battalions. But deep inside, he is expressing his fear. You know, how much ever you try, you cannot hide it. It will come out.
Is it also because he has a personal fear of Bhim, because in terms of competition?
In terms of competition, yes.
And
in
also his vow, I mean, that he is vowed to kill him. And he knows that if he is vowed, he will give it his vow.
Yeah, if he had taken the vow, he will give it his vow. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
100%. That's true.
But he's insecure for his own life to a certain
Absolutely.
Point.
He is only bothered about himself.
Yeah.
If last minute is going to win and this is what he is supposed to do, if he has to give up few people on their side, he will be ready for that. You understand? Duryodhan is an out and out scheming and planning selfish fellow. You understand? See, everybody has goodness. In that sense, Duryodhan also had his good qualities. We can't say he is entirely zero. Nobody you will find on earth who is 100% bad. There will be goodness in them also. So like that, you will see a lot of good qualities in Duryodhan as well.
Like being a friend for Karna.
Yeah, being a friend for Karna. There are a lot of other things.
Sankat with him, with his uncle, Shakuni's advice.
Yeah. Yeah, even though he's generally also he has some good qualities in him. See, from the childhood days, he was brought up with so much of attachment from Dhritarashtra. When the children express jealousy, it is the duty of the parents to set it right rather than feeding it further. You understand? Dhritarashtra was feeding it. Dhritarashtra was feeding the likes and dislikes of Duryodhan. Duryodhan is a typical example of a Rajasic person whose likes and dislikes was fed by his father because of his attachment. Therefore, he grew up to this level of this monstrous proportion, became what he was. if he was guided properly from the childhood days, then he could have been molded better. All of us are like that in life. Children will have their share of likes and dislikes, right? The greed and jealousy and all that as they grow. But it is a duty of the parents to objectively look into it and correct it, take corrective measures, rather than feed it because it's my child. Instead of sitting and admiring the jealousy in your children. Jealousy is not only bad if it is in somebody else's mind. If it is in your child, it is bad. Because it ultimately destroys them. So, the army of ours protected by Bhishma is unlimited. Quantity can never ever compensate for quality. And a person who is qualitative is never after quantity. Quantity may be after him, but he is never after quantity. He may be found amongst quantities, but in his mind he will not find the quantity. That is why he is able to sleep peacefully. You understand? See, remember this. Food can be in the fridge or in your pate, but never in your mind. It can be on the plate or in your pate, in your stomach. Never in your mind. Are you with me? So, in the case of quantitative people, the quantity is in the mind. In the case of qualitative people, quantity may be there externally available to them, but it is never seated in their mind. In Arjuna's mind, there was only Krishna. You understand? He is a rajasic person, so he had the kingdom and all that in his mind. But he never ever has kingdom which is not coupled with dharma. If you go to Arjuna's mind, no doubt he is not a sannyasi wherein he has renounced the throne. Obviously in his mind all that has a value. But along with that, dharma is also seated. You understand? There is another category of people where quantity is seated. To fulfill the quantity, if dharma will help, they are okay. If dharma will not help, they will throw it and they will only go after quantity. At any cost, I need to attain that. That category Duryodhana belongs to. And such destructive people can never be peaceful. In spite of everything, you will be restless and agitated. And that agitation, how much ever you try not to express and show, will come forth here and there. So when Duryodhana speaks here, you can clearly see the fear inside Duryodhana, which is exposed through his words. We'll continue next week. पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमाधाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ओम शांति 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 पूर्णमिदं।